Hello and welcome to Slycast, and this is such an exciting episode. We're celebrating Rambo First Blood Part 2, which was released May 22nd, 1985, Memorial Day weekend, and this episode is coming out on Memorial Day weekend. And we've covered First Blood Part 2 before, but we can't not talk about the movie on its 35th, so this episode is jam-packed. I'll be discussing the movie with Mike Kunda, Ryan from the Going the Distance podcast. We'll have a contribution from one of the Slycast's first listeners and some of your emails. So I am beyond thrilled to start the episode with this discussion that I had with author David Morrell, and we're just going to get right to it. I am beyond honored and privileged to welcome to the show Rambo's father, author David Morrell. David, welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And if anybody's curious why I'm Rambo's father, I wrote a novel called First Blood, which was published in 1972 and purchased by Columbia Pictures at that time. And that novel adaptation into film went through four different studios and 26 scripts, and then eventually was on the screen in 1982. So I have fun calling myself Rambo's father. People seem to, you know, get the joke.
Yeah.
Seem to enjoy the humor.
I got to tell you, I think lots of people are aware of that novel because there are many book circles that I sort of circulate in on the internet. And it's probably about once a week I see somebody post a paperback version of First Blood and says, has anybody read this?
Well, it was my first novel. And as I said, it was published in 1972. And today, we're recording this in May of 2020. Today, 48 years later, it's still in print. It's never been out of print. And that's very unusual for a book. So it's been very gratifying. It took me 3 years to write the book, and I was trying to find a new way to write action at the time. And unfortunately, we're getting this again. We have a shot rang out or gun smoke filled the air, even though there's no gun smoke in with modern ammunition. But, you know, there's such a hilarious, bad description of action in a lot of books at the time. And as I said, even today. I was in graduate school at the time, and I was doing a master's thesis on Hemingway's style. And I don't write like Hemingway. I don't pretend I'm Hemingway. He was a genius and all that, but you can learn from the best. And what I had begun to realize studying him is that in some ways you could call Hemingway an action writer. The For Whom the Bell Tolls, A Farewell to Arms, two major war novels. To Have and Have Not, which is a gangster novel and things of that nature. And I began to realize that he was one of a kind for the way he wrote action, that he had tried to do it in a way that hadn't been done before. And so I thought of that as a good challenge, that in writing First Blood, I was writing what I hoped would be an action novel that didn't feel like a genre novel. And so how to do that? So I was sort of thinking about Hemingway in that goal of how, when I'm writing the action scenes, can I do it in a way that I didn't think was familiar? And I think that's one reason why the book is still in print, because amazingly, all these years later, it's still, it's not like I sit down and reread it every night, but you know, the way people talk about it, it appears that the book still feels as fresh as back in 1972.
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of those rare cases, too, where an adaptation for the screen modified the source material a little bit, but actually worked for the medium. And I know you've talked about, you know, the film First Blood a lot, but that's one of the things I appreciated about the way Stallone at least handled his approach to the character is he knew he couldn't present him the way that you did in the novel. And, you know, sometimes I think Hollywood adaptations aren't faithful enough. Or they're too faithful. But I think the adaptation of First Blood is, I think it kind of lands right in the middle.
Oh, I admire that film immensely. everyone associated with that did just a tremendous job. Now, it's very odd, as you know, because what we have is a film and a book that have almost the same story. I won't go into spoilers, but there is at least one significant difference between the novel and the film. And also, it interprets the character different. My Rambo is furious about what happened in Vietnam and the way he is treated returning. Whereas the character in First Blood, the movie, 10 years later, history having changed, society having changed, he's a victim. And the difference in that theme caused the approaches to reinterpret the plot. But I don't mind that, because as long as the film works on its own terms, I'm happy. And Stephen King once said to me that he thought I'd been treated about as well as a novelist could get treated, because he actually recognized the story.
Yeah.
Which he said in some cases, not all, I don't want to knock the films, but he said in some cases he couldn't recognize the source material he'd written. And if anybody's curious, on Blu-ray versions of First Blood, the film, I have an audio commentary in which I discuss the book's origins and the similarity and the differences with the film. One of the few times that a production company asked an author to talk about a book, most of the times they forget there was a book involved at all. But I had a lot to say, and I think people will find it interesting. And, it shows my admiration for the film, even though, as you note, they're sort of different. You didn't say this, but it's a metaphor I use. They're different train tracks.
Yeah.
Same. They're trains, but on a kind of different track.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say one of the biggest differences was, their structure, of course, but then also the character of Will Teasel. And I thought this might be a good time. Yeah. I know we recently lost Brian Dennehy. I wasn't sure if you wanted to talk about that character a little bit, and then also Brian Dennehy as a person.
Well, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Brian lived in Santa Fe in the mid-1990s, and I was living here at the time, so I had a chance to speak with him. I was not on set for the first film, so I didn't get a chance to speak to him in that regard, but I found him personally to be an affable, smart man, very friendly. This was in a social circumstance, and I really liked the guy personally. He was big.
Yeah,
I'm not a big guy. I'm about 5'8", but Brian was big, and I'm also not. I'm maybe 160 pounds, and Brian was probably 190, 200 pounds, big. And like many big men, I'm thinking of John Wayne. He gave me the impression of small feet. That this is not unusual with some big guys. And he, an extraordinary actor now, and to slide into the movie. In the novel, what I was responding, writing 1968, 69, 70, 71, I was responding to what I thought was a near civil war that was about to occur in the United States. And anybody who lived then knows what I'm talking about. And those who don't, I suggest you research the Kent State shootings of May 1970, in which student protesters against the war were shot to death by National Guardsmen. And we can get into all the reasons why one and then the other and all this came together and why the Guardsmen might have felt threatened. It's not the point. The point is people were being killed because of the war.
Right.
And there were in 1968, not 10 riots, not 20 riots, not 50 riots, but several hundred riots in the United States related either to the war or to the civil rights movement, which in its own way was related to the war, because an undue proportion of blacks went to Vietnam because they couldn't get the education deferment.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was responding to was the war coming home. That was my version. And what happens if the Vietnam War occurs in the United States? That was my metaphor. And at the same time, if I was playing right against left, so to speak, so I was playing old against young. At the time, the saying was that never trust anybody if you were young. Never trust anybody over 30.
Yeah.
And what you had was what was then called the generational conflict, a generational divide in which the young and old had drastically different views about what it meant to be an American and where the country was going. So my police chief had to be older. I saw him as being old enough to be Rambo's father, metaphorically. And Will Teasel had been a war hero in Korea, where he had seen conventional warfare. But Vietnam was like Mars. So when he comes in conflict with Rambo, it's not only a kind of father-son thing, but it's also conventional war against guerrilla war. And with the movie, they became brothers, not father-son. So the movies, and I don't object to this. It's an interesting way to do this. There, Sly and Brian were almost the same age. So what you have is it's as if it's in the family, it's between brothers. And so it made it a little different and more physical because, you know, an older father wouldn't necessarily. But actually, I back that up because, in fact, Teasel is very physical in my novel when it comes to dealing with Rambo. So, you know, that was some of the things that were going on. And basically the novel, if you saw past the action, was a kind of allegory for what was happening at the time. But I don't think I used the words Vietnam, not a war, twice in the novel, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So it doesn't date itself.
Right.
I don't have any timely references. So you can read the novel today and think it was happening now.
Yeah. And you've talked about how it's never gone out of print. You've put out versions in the last couple of years where you have a pretty good forward material that covers a lot of behind the scenes on that.
Yes. Well, there's a current paperback, which has an introduction and a very informative interview at the back. But the editions that I prefer, First Blood, Rambo First Blood Part 2 and Rambo 3, I did novelizations for the next two movies. They were recently, last few years, released by a collector's book company called Gauntlet Press.
Right.
In editions of 500 signed, numbered hardbacks that had an extraordinary amount of background material in them, which I personally selected from my files. I was a professor of literature. And in the day when I taught, there was something called the Norton Critical Edition, which would have the text and then a whole lot of other stuff related to it. And so I thought this is my opportunity to do my version of Norton Critical Editions only for the Rambo. So, for example, in the First Blood, I have the original first chapter that was never published.
Wow.
I have essays and other things and photographs of the locations I visited to write about and things like that. And as the books go on, there are more extras because with the film, there is obviously more material. And so with Rambo 2, I have lots of material. Rambo 3, lots of material. And people say, well, why only 500 copies? And the answer is the extras were from the LA Times, from Entertainment Weekly, from Variety, the show business newspaper, and the licensing arrangement with them in order to reprint these lengthy essays.
Right.
The one from the LA Times is called The Curious Evolution of John Rambo and tells the whole story, as it were. And then I had footnotes to those articles to correct where I thought that wasn't correct. So it's like a Quentin Tarantino meta kind of interview where there's me commenting on the interviews and what have you. And anyhow, these are wonderful editions. They're somewhat pricey, I believe at $50. Mm-hmm. But anybody who cares about these films or my work, my books, would find these indispensable for understanding the background. And for Rambo 3, there's an essay about the fall of Caraco Pictures, for example, from Entertainment Weekly. And there's also an essay from Variety saying how Rambo 3 became, at that time, the most expensive American movie ever made. So, I mean, you know, big stuff. So anyway, the First Blood's all sold out. You can maybe get it on the collector's secondary market for extra money. But there are still a few of the Rambo 2 and Rambo 3 books with this wealth of stuff and available only from the publishers. So if people care, Gauntlet Press.
Yeah.
At gauntletpress.com and go to the authors section, look under my name, and then all this stuff will pop up.
Yeah, I'll provide a direct link to the author page there on Gauntlet Press. And I think it's a great time to sort of segue into Rambo First Blood Part 2 and your novelization. So the First Blood comes out, it does what it does theatrically. At what point are you sort of contacted about Rambo First Blood Part 2, and how exactly did you get involved in writing the novelization?
Well, let's start with the unique production company, Carolco Pictures. That was run by two men, Andrew Vanya and Mario Kosar. And Andy, I had conversations with Mario, but not as many as I had with Andy, whom I liked a lot. He's no longer with us. And Andy would call me when they were filming First Blood. Now, no producer does this.
Right.
This is like, what on earth? It's the end of the world kind of never happened before kind of thing. Andy would call me and say, we're prepping First Blood. We're thinking, this was one conversation, we're thinking of moving it from Kentucky, where the novel is set, to the Pacific Northwest. And the reason we're doing that is we're going to film in Canada, and we have a better financial arrangement up there. We can make the film for less money look as good. But we don't want to jump into something without thinking about it. And is there a reason? Imagine the producer acting the novelist. This is unheard of. Is there a reason why the story cannot work if we translate it from Kentucky to the Pacific Northwest? A very valid question. And my answer was, go ahead. There's no reason why it won't work. There's no geographical necessity for it to be there. So those were the kinds of conversations I had with him. And he would send me pieces about, you know, articles about how the movie was progressing. I got a case of wine and you don't get this from production companies either, believe me, and what have you. So on Rambo 2, in the contract, when I sold the rights to Columbia Pictures, who sold the rights to Warner Brothers, who sold the rights on a contingent basis to another company, and then Carolco picked it up because it had gone back to Warner Brothers. In that Columbia Pictures, it's the document, I have the exclusive rights to create books about Rambo.
Okay.
No one else could write a novelization. So Andy phoned and said, we'd like you to do a novelization. Now, in the day, in 1984, this would have been, for an 85 release, the novelization format was extremely popular.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason for that was, it's hard to imagine now, but the reason for that was, at the time, you could not readily rewatch films that you were fans of.
Mm-hmm.
The VHS format was just being released, and these were by and large, you could only purchase them, and they were very expensive. Mm-hmm. I remember buying a copy of the VHS of First Blood in a damn pan and scan format for like $40.
Yeah.
And I had to go to some effort to buy it. And then we had video stores came along, and that ate into a little bit into the novelization market. And then, of course, when DVDs came along, but that was some time later, why would you want a novelization if you could watch the movie readily? So publishers did not any longer, with rare exceptions, commission novelizations. But in this case, Carolco saw it as an opportunity to promote the film. And in fact, I'll skip ahead, when the book came out, it was with the press kit.
Wow.
So the book along with the press kit were handed out to all the journalists. These guys were real smart.
Mm-hmm.
So Andy said, "You're the only one that can do it. We want you to do it." And I said, "You know, it wasn't a respected format. Basically, the rule was that you got the shooting script and you didn't vary from it. Mm-hmm. And basically, you described a lot of stuff and you described a lot of interior. This is what they were thinking. But the dialogue and the action had to be verbatim as it was in the shooting script, which is sort of like writing as a photocopying machine."
Yeah.
And I really wasn't interested. And then he sent me the script, which was, it's been a while since I looked at it, but my recollection was it was about 86 pages. And scripts have a lot of white space, but this had a lot of white space. And it had lines like, now, I don't know what the reading script was, but the shooting script had lines like, "Rambo jumps up and shoots this guy, Rambo jumps up and shoots that guy." So I said to Andy, "You know, I don't think this is for me." And then they said, "We really need this." And they were offering 15 cents on the dollar for me to write this. So whatever they made from the book, if they made, we'll use a small fee, like $100, I would have got $15. Mm-hmm. Well, that simply wasn't worth my time. And so I said no. And then they came back with 25%, and then they came back with 40%, and then they came back with 50%, and then they came back with 85% that I would keep, and they would get the $15 or whatever. And I still hesitated because it was not a respected form. And one morning, it's fun to reminisce about this, one morning, the doorbell rang as I was getting ready to go to class. I said I was a professor, and it was FedEx, the start of, you know, home delivery of that sort. And there at 8 o'clock in the morning was a videotape of a promo they were preparing for Rambo First Blood Part 2. And so I had time before I went to class, and I popped it in, and it was Rambo's helicopter attack on the POW camp. And shooting the towers and Jerry Gold. I love Jerry Goldsmith's music and everything, you know. Uh-huh. And Jerry's music is booming away, and Rambo jumps out of the helicopter, and he's got it's a smaller version of the submachine gun of the M60. Actually, I think the M60 is a full machine gun. Mm-hmm. So it was done, and I went upstairs, and my wife was feeding the kids and for to go to school, and I said, "You know, this is going to be a big movie." So I start thinking a little bit more about this. And I got back to them and I said to Andy, "All right, I've got two issues. One is I can't be hampered by this photocopy thing of I'm just going to copy, you know, Rambo jumps up and shoots this guy. I just don't know what to do with that." So I said, "I need the freedom to interpret the story. And one example would be that in the movie, it's alluded to very briefly, you really have to pay attention, that this is the POW camp Rambo escaped from that set up the novel and the movie First Blood."
Right.
So that's it. You wouldn't know from anything in the second film that he was going back to the prisoner of war camp from which he escaped. And surely to God, he would have some emotional reaction. Surely there'd be some trauma that he was reliving. And so I said to Andy, "You know, this needs to be explored. It's not in the movie, but I want to dive into it." And there were other examples. And then I said, "But even then, I don't know if there's enough here for a book. Do you have anything else I can rely on?" And that's when the glorious announcement was made that they had commissioned a script by James Cameron.
Okay.
Which was not used. All right. So why wasn't it used? It's almost the same story. If you compare the two stories, they're almost the same. But In Cameron's version, the two significant differences are that Rambo is seriously psychologically disturbed. It begins in a mental institution where Rambo is in a dungeon where he keeps knocking out the lights in his barred cell. And the guard says to Troutman, who in the first scene visits him, the guard says he thinks he's the fucking Prince of Darkness. Well, so the second thing was that Rambo in the Cameron script had a sidekick.
Yeah.
And this sidekick almost certainly, I mean, you won't find any confirmation of this, but almost certainly it was going to be John Travolta.
That's what I've read, yes.
Because Sly had directed Travolta in the sequel to
Saturday Night Fever, yeah,
Staying Alive. And I guess they got along. I mean, it's impossible to read the script and not say that's Travolta. And when the movie got made, Travolta, or the sidekick, whatever, he was young. He was sort of playing it for laughs. Rambo had to help him along. He was cute, and all that disappeared. So I said, all right, I'll do the novelization, but this is what I want to do. A third of it will be Cameron, because there's wonderful stuff in this script, particularly the opening and the mental institution. Also, Cameron does not explore the fact that Rambo's going back to the POW camp where he escaped from. So I said, also, there's a lot of stuff I want to add, so that probably when this is all done, the novelization will be one-third shooting script, one-third Cameron, one-third me. And they said, fine. So I wrote the novelization under a lot of duress because this had taken a long time. I had to write it between Thanksgiving and just before Christmas in order to meet the publishing deadline. I was teaching at the same time.
Oh, wow.
But it was so wonderfully creative because now we're no longer dealing with this disrespected format. This is now what a novelization could be if you were faithful to the movie, but you were faithful to everything else around it. And the novelization was on the New York Times bestseller list for 6 weeks. So, I mean, I really had a lot of fun doing it. I look back on it with pride, but there was the problem of the fact that, maybe we should say it, Rambo dies at the end of my novel.
Yes.
And he died at the end of the first cut of First Blood, but a test audience said, no, we want him to live. So they reshot the ending and he lived. And then the producers told me they had not thought about sequels, but holy cow, now they could have them.
Yeah.
So I was in this quandary, and finally a novelist friend of mine, Max Allen Collins, perhaps best known for The Road to Perdition, and his Dick Tracy comic strips.
Yeah, I know him from the Quarry books.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you know, well, Max is a great guy, and he lived in Iowa, and we crossed paths, and he said, it's simple, David. Just have a note saying in my novel, Rambo died in the movies he lives.
Okay. Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. So that's what I did.
Oh, that's great. So let's fast forward to the movie coming out. And so you had background knowledge of what was going to occur in the script. But what was your initial reaction when you sat down and watched it in the theaters?
Well, it's a fun movie. Now, we have to realize that the Rambo of my novel is different from the Rambo of First Blood, the film. The Rambo of 2 and 3 is different from the Rambo in First Blood, the film, and my novel. The Rambo in Rambo 4 is closer to my novel than any of the films.
Yeah.
And the Rambo in Rambo 5 bears no resemblance to any Rambo that I recognize.
Yeah.
So there are lots of Rambos. So allowing for that, and the famous line, sir, do we get to win this time, which was a sort of symbol of the Ronald Reagan presidencies, the world had changed. The 70s defeatism was now, the 80s was something else, a kind of regrouping of America. And Ronald Reagan indeed talked about Rambo a lot during his press conferences, using Rambo as a kind of model for his presidency. Well, anyway, the film, I just loved the hell out of it. It was so funny. It's like Indiana Jones in the sense that it resembles a Saturday afternoon serial, you know, where at the every 5 minutes the hero seems like he's going to die, but he somehow it gets out, he's rescued, whatever. And I mean, the fight in the helicopter sort of reminded me of fights on stagecoaches in westerns.
Yeah.
And you know, with Rambo with the knife and the bow, it's a Tarzan movie, and so it's kind of Tarzan and a western, and it's just one of the great action films. With a lot of humor. It's not realistic by any stretch. And I'll give an example. I was at Fort Bragg, which is where special forces are based in part. And I was speaking to an instructor there, and he said they just thought that movie was hilarious because Rambo's in the helicopter and he pretends that the helicopter's in trouble, and the big, massive Soviet helicopter shows up, and Rambo has this rocket launcher that yes. he raises and he fires through the open canopy of his helicopter and blows the other one apart. There's only one problem: the back of the helicopter, all the rescued POWs are there, and he would have blown the hell with the back blast out of all those POWs. And the instructor at Fort Bragg told me that they used to go to the movie and laugh and laugh, and they were rolling around on the floor in the theater laughing at some of the stuff that's so inaccurate. But he said it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because the spirit of the thing is so high, it's so energetic. And again, we have to give credit to Jerry Goldsmith for his just terrific, terrific scores. Jerry never did a bad score.
No, not at all. And it's funny, David, one of the other conversations I had for this episode, we kind of determined that this is the version of Rambo that everybody parodies. You know, when you see it referenced, this is the one that's in a lot of people's minds.
Oh, absolutely. And between First Blood and Rambo 2, huge influence. I mean, when you look at, I'd have to look at when Die Hard was released, but, you know, somebody asks Bruce Willis's character who he thinks he is, Rambo. And there are other references all through the mid-80s in action movies to somebody pretending to be Rambo. I mean, this franchise rewrote how action movies were. I mean, if you go back and look at, say, Bullet, which is a well-respected action movie with Steve McQueen, or any of the early Bond movies,
right,
you have 3 to 4 action sequences, if that, separated by a lot of stuff. I mean, if you think of Bullet, you think of the car chase. You maybe think of the chase slightly. It's not very dramatic. No, there's no payoff in the hospital. And you maybe think of the gunfight in the chase at the airport. But all the talk between that, and it's still – I mean, I love Steve McQueen. I mean, it's a great action movie. But what happened with First Blood and then into Rambo 2 is that – you had an intensifying of the amount of action per, if you know, in First Blood is, I think the clock's in at about 54 minutes of action for a 96 minute film.
Pretty good.
Yeah. But I think with Rambo 2, it's probably the proportion is even greater in favor of the action. And it just rewrote everything. And then we have to add one more, which is that Rambo 2 was one of the last films not to use CGI.
Yeah.
That the action in it is real stuff, dummies and, you know, the head exploding and dummies and, you know, but it's real. And when Sly's jumping over, Sly does a lot of his stunts. I personally saw him do a lot of his stunts on Rambo 3. So, I mean, you know, terrific athlete. And there may have been some doubles used. I have no idea. Inevitably, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the movie business is. But you have the feeling those are real people doing real dangerous stuff. So I cannot, you know, I have no problems at all with that film. I just think it's just a fabulous film.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you so much for taking some time to give us a little bit of the history behind not only First Blood Part 2, but First Blood. I know your time's valuable, so we do really appreciate it. In the show notes, I'll put a link to the Gauntlet Press. And also good to direct people to your personal website?
Please, yes, davidmorrell.net.
All right, excellent. David, once again, thank you.
You're very welcome. And this was fun. I haven't talked about this stuff in a while, and I'll send you some artwork if you can use it.
Absolutely. I would love to see anything you can send.
Okay.
And David, before I let you go, I couldn't not ask you about Richard Crenna and your general feelings about him and his portrayal of General Troutman.
So Richard Crenna, as we know, or maybe some people don't know, Kirk Douglas was originally cast in his role in First Blood, and Kirk in costume showed up for a week of shooting, and there was some difficulty. There are different stories about what happened, but you know, creative differences, whatever. And Kirk left, I guess he was there on a Monday, left on a Friday. So Lynn Stallmaster, the casting director, who lived here in Santa Fe, where I live, and actually I had a chance to talk to him on several occasions, and he told me some of this story, which is he was the casting director for First Blood, and he got the call, Kirk's gone, we need somebody to play Troutman, we need him by Monday. And so there was Lynn, and what they needed was somebody who was steady, who would be able to step in, I mean, a true professional, and who wouldn't be temperamental. I'm not saying that Kirk was, although there were some stories, but I don't want to get into that,
yeah,
whether that's true or not. But they needed somebody who, under great stress, would be steady.
Mm-hmm.
So the deal was made like Sunday afternoon. I think Richard may have been reading the script on flying to Vancouver, because the film was filmed outside in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was playing catch up. And I think that added to the performance in First Blood, because he was sort of neutral. You know, was he cheering for Rambo? Was he, you know, who was he? In my novel, he sees all this as fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
He taught this guy, and then all these National Guardsmen and all. And in the back of his mind, he's sort of thinking, you know, I could handle this. The system in First Blood destroys Rambo. That's the part of the allegory. And there's some discussion about that theme in First Blood between Brian Dennehy and Richard. All right. So now we get to Rambo 2. And now he's sort of in the role more. And there's a moment at the end that I really admire, where Rambo has gotten the POWs back. The helicopter has landed. He's jumped out. He's got the weapon. And Troutman blocks Rambo's entrance into the hangar. And Rambo looks at him, and Troutman looks back at him. And then there's the slightest – Richard denied this to me, but I think he just didn't remember years later.
Yeah.
There's the slightest nod that Richard, i.e. Troutman, gives to Rambo, as if giving him permission.
Yeah.
And steps here, and then Rambo goes in. And it's that nod that I think makes the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And would Rambo have charged past without the nod? I don't think so.
Right. He's still his commanding officer, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So I just had a lot of respect for Richard. And he'd been around since he was a child actor. And he was so good in everything he did, drama, comedy, and there's a picture he did. He hated when I told him this, but he was in Body Heat, and he's only in it for 5 minutes.
Right.
They needed a husband who we knew, even we didn't see him much, was, we knew, pretty deadly. And so I used to tell Richard, we weren't that close, but we talked, you know, because of Rambo. And I used to tell Richard, man, you made that movie. You were only in it for 5 minutes, but man, you made it, because if it was a wimpier husband, it wouldn't have felt as deadly. But he didn't like me saying that, because, you know, it wasn't a starring role, and, you know, actors want to go for the big scenes. But the times I spent with him were special times.
Excellent. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Yep.
Hello, I'm Dave from the 60 Minutes With podcast, and I've been a Sylvester Stallone fan since 1978, when, aged 13, my school film club showed Rocky. Since then, I've watched all of Stallone's movies numerous times, yet despite Rocky Balboa being the character that introduced me to Stallone, it's John J. Rambo who has always connected with me the most. I mean, hell, I even have two tattoos of him on me, one of them being from Rambo 2, which celebrates its 35th anniversary this year. I even also wear a Jade Buddha replica from that movie too. So, obsessed? Me? Possibly. And come on, let's admit it. Haven't we all had a conniving superior like Murdoch at our workplace that we wanted to face off and tell some home truths to, like at the end of this? Without the massive gun, of course. And Rambo 2, it takes the character further into superhero territory, which would then take an even bigger leap in the third movie. But still, at its heart, isn't it about a man who just wants to do the right thing in the world and hates injustice? And isn't that a good thing? And here we are now, 5 movies down the line, and we may have seen the last of John Rambo. But thanks to the magic of cinema, his story and his adventures, they're always going to be there to watch. The 35 years since I first watched this have flown by, and I hope that I'm still here in another 35 years, by which point I'll be 90, and that during those 35 years, there'll be many more new Stallone movies to watch, as well as always revisiting the classics. Whenever he stops making them, as sad a day as that'll be, we've still always got the films that he's made. So happy 35th anniversary, Rambo 2. And of course, much love to everyone at the Slycast from all of us here at 60 Minutes With, who are based in Wales in the UK. I've been a listener since the very beginning, and long may you continue to do what you do.
And our 35th birthday celebration of Rambo First Blood Part 2 continues. And I'm here with Mike Kunda to talk about Rambo First Blood Part 2. And Mike, it's funny, I was just thinking about this before we sat down. You were not a part of the show yet when we reviewed or, went over First Blood Part 2 on the Slycast. So this is your first opportunity to talk about it on the show.
Yeah, this is something I was really bumming out, because the early 80s was such a brilliant time to talk about Sly's rise and successes. I mean, could you imagine filming Rambo 2 and then Rocky 4 back to back? Two of the hugest, biggest, most gigundous movies of all time ever. I mean, and I never got to share that those thoughts with you guys. Well, at least not on Rambo 2. I never got to share my thoughts.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. We did do, I think your first appearance on the show was sort of an interview with you where we also covered Rockies 1 through 4, which is a really, really great discussion. And it's the discussion that convinced us to try and convince you to join the show regularly, and thankfully you did.
You know what's funny about that? Here's how I always pictured that moment. I picture it as you and the Jeffs are sitting around in this big room, 20-foot ceilings, solid oak bookcases all around you. You're all in blazers with patches on the elbow. You have pipes, and you're drinking this cognac. And you're all asking yourselves, this chap Kunda, should we bring him on board or not? I don't know. He does have a lovely singing voice. Let's give this poor bugger a chance. That's how I always saw it going down, that I was voted in. So, you know, this, as I've always said, I love you guys, and I'm so happy to talk about Rambo 2. I'm only sorry the two Jeffs are not here at this moment.
No, but they're here in spirit, as always. So one thing I was thinking about this morning before we sat down, Mike, was, you know, Rambo, the character of John Rambo, has had a wild, strange journey, after being introduced to audiences, cinematically at least, through First Blood. But Rambo First Blood Part 2, it might be the most important Rambo movie. And let me say that it's probably the most important because it made everything else possible. I mean, a lot of people wouldn't have thought to make a sequel to First Blood, but they did. And that spawned everything that came after it. It also transformed the character in a way. Mm-hmm. Do you have any thoughts on that?
So I think it's very interesting. No, I don't think anybody would have thought to do a sequel to First Blood. I mean, it just, to me, sequels, they weren't what they are today, sequels. So I think the fact that Rambo 2 took that character of John J. Rambo and took him skidding across the political floor, for one thing. I mean, that was one. When Reagan said, oh, seeing what to do next time in a terrorism situation, I'll send Rambo. I mean, you know, for a sitting president to acknowledge this in a at the same time when Rambo 2 was out in theaters, it was remarkable. But even going past that, here is where we see Sylvester Stallone has gone into some type of area. He's become an icon. He has become a literal icon, whether it's action, acting, whatever it is. I do believe Rambo First Blood Part 2, as much as Rocky 3 elevated him, Rambo 2 took him to a whole other level. I mean, you had t-shirts, you had the action figures, lunchboxes, water gun sets, fake Rambo knives. I mean, this was really epic on the action figures on that type of front as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. If you look at any kind of parody or reference to Rambo, the character, most people are using the Rambo from First Blood Part 2 as their reference.
Agreed, 100%. Rarely are they thinking about that drifter, that Clint Eastwood High Plains drifter coming into town, destroying the town, and then, of course, you know, they never think that Rambo. I think you're absolutely right. Rambo 2 is what's in people's heads.
Now, do you recall seeing Rambo 2 or First Blood Part 2 for the first time?
Absolutely, vividly. It was a Friday night, and it was 1985 in high school. I think it was a junior. I was a senior. And so when it came out, I had gone with a friend of mine, Mark Colarossi. He's a guy who's 6 foot 10. And both of us, we had no girlfriends, no girls would go on dates with us. And so what we did, we went and got a pizza before the movie. And we sat on the hood of my mother's car, and we ate the pizza, and then we walked over to the movie theater. And it was sold out. I mean, it was unbelievable. Yeah. And it blew us all away. I mean, the cheering, the screaming. I mean, you don't see that in movies then. And I tell you, you really don't see it that often in movies today. You know, I've seen it only really Rocky IV. I've seen it. Rocky Balboa, I saw it. I saw it in In the last Rambo, the fourth Rambo, that you really saw it, and the Star Wars movies. People were so into this, literally believing this John Rambo was this one-man army. We really had never seen anything like it. I mean, it was a reinvigoration of the action genre, I think, as far as films go.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the main things to key in on here is, you know, I've stressed it a lot on this show before. It's a theme that we've talked about a lot, but it's the fact that Stallone, as a filmmaker, as a creative type, mm-hmm. knows what to give audiences. I'm not going to say he's done it consistently, but for the most part, his batting average with delivering product to that's going to connect with an audience is very, very high.
Very much so. Very, very much so. He really, really gets it. There are many times where you'll see a Stallone movie where he phones it in. You know, he really does it. Even in some of the other movies where they don't live up to it, it's still – he himself is very engaging to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean there's a handful of those films where – you know, you can sort of see that maybe Sly was there more as an actor instead of, you know, a screenwriter or a director, or, you know, he just didn't have that creative input.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, First Blood checks all the boxes, or First Blood Part 2 checks all the boxes in terms of delivering, you know, just a great, great popcorn movie.
Yeah. Oh my God. I remember Hugh Downs and Barbara Walters on 2020. They did an hour-long special about Stallone and Rambo 2 when it came out in 1985. I still have it on VHS somewhere. And to me, it was the epitome when – at the end of the episode, they had the Rocky – they showed Stallone as Rambo – on the sampan, I think that's what they're called, the boat where he mm-hmm. stabs the guy and he shoots early in the movie and he has to jump off. You made it, Rambo! Okay. Yeah. So, of course, the acting, maybe Caballo's acting, Julie Nicholson, wasn't exactly the best acting in the world, but, you know, it was still doable. Anyways, There was a scene that they showed on 2020 where Stallone was actually writing the script of Rocky IV as he's on that sampan dressed as Rambo. And just think about that.
Yeah.
Think about the iconicness of that. And then when we got the first trailers for Rambo 2 and you saw the helicopter coming over the river and then the blowing up the guard tower and he has that trademark Rambo scream. Holy Christ. That just puts me over the edge. As a matter of fact, as we're talking now, Craig, I actually have Rambo Part 2 playing. He's covered with leeches in the pit as the Russian Podolsky walks over to him. So I love this movie. There's nothing I don't love about this movie.
All right, excellent. No, yeah, no, I mean it's really a hard movie to not like.
Yeah.
You hit a lot of, you know, sequences there. Are there any, you know, key sequences that really jump out at you when you watch the movie as just ones you can't wait to see?
So we all know Sly is the king of the montage. So when he does the blow up montage next to Jerry, was it Goldsmith, right?
Jerry Goldsmith's great score, yeah.
Of course. Brilliant score. So when he's blowing everything up, right, and he does the scream and everybody, it was just, to me, that is so damn iconic. But one thing I wanted to mention, I never realized this. Troutman tells him at the fence, if everything goes right, Johnny, there'll be a presidential pardon in this for you. I never realized that that was given to him. I don't know why I never saw that before. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Now, we never saw Rambo get that presidential pardon because, of course, he walks off at the end and he stays in Thailand and yeah. He works at the monastery. And so we know what happens. Does he get that? Is there some news footage that, you know, Vietnam veteran John Rambo was given a presidential pardon for blowing up a town in the northwest? You know, I wonder that. It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, obviously it occurred because, you know, there's seemingly no trouble when he returns at the end of Rambo. Mm. And, you know, we see him established back in Arizona in Last Blood.
Yeah, yeah. When I think one of the other, there's no deal. I mean, he's just walking down the road, going back to his. So maybe he did get the presidential pardon, but we just don't know. It's much like when Rocky runs the Rocky steps. What does he do after he runs up the steps? He takes a cab. He takes a subway. Paulie comes by. The robot rolls in and he rolls back. Like, what happens? I think the other thing I like is the escape scene when Rambo is on the bed spring and he's getting the shocks and, you know, Podolsky, they carve his face up and all that. And I think when Cobayo comes to save him, and of course they make the run through the jungle, then they end up, spoiler alert, kill her. I think if I had one scene would be the bow and arrow at the waterfall scene where he blows up Vin. To me, that, when I hear Rambo 2, that's basically it. That and the black knife, the black and silver knife is just so classical to me. It's the best.
Yeah, that sequence in like the stream there, it's so great because, you know, Vin is unloading his weapon there. And I don't know if it's a matter of Rambo knowing that he's pretty much out of range or whatever. Yeah. And he just takes his time loading up the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
You know, and loads that extra with the exploding bow and arrow too.
It's so badass because, you know, in the real world, there's no way that arrow is going to hit that guy. It is too front heavy. It's fishtailing. There's no way it's going to work. But at this point, Craig, they have us. They believe us. It's like the shark in Jaws. No shark is going to capsize a boat. But if you're with it all that time, you're just Rambo, whether it's a death wish, whether he's a badass, whatever it is a great scene in movie history.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there's that fine line where, you know, suspension of disbelief comes in.
Yeah.
And I think it's played fine here. Now, you did bring up, you know, when the character of Kobai dies. Yeah. And that's, like, probably one of my only bits of criticism in this is it's like, you know, Rambo leaves behind what the bow and arrow, and he goes back to pick it up, and that's when she gets taken out. I'm like,
I know, yeah, it's tough because nobody wants to see John Rambo fall in love. Nobody wants to see John Wayne have a sex scene in a movie, right?
Yeah.
So I get that, but again, maybe there could have been 10 other ways they could have killed her off, but this is what they chose, and I mean, I know it is, and just but Rambo. I don't know. Rambo should never have love. Yeah. Once Adrian dies, Rocky cannot find another woman. That's just the way it is. His yeah. one and only love. The rules of cosmos will say Rocky cannot get another love, and I just don't think Rambo should have love either. I don't think he was made. His mission on Earth is not for love. It's for war and fighting. So that might be a little cheesy, corny on my end. Maybe people would disagree with that, but I don't know. That's how I always saw it.
No, not at all. I think you're completely on point there, Mike. I mean, Rambo as a character seems like somebody that sort of has embraced isolation almost.
Exactly.
So let's look a little bit at the cast.
Sure.
We had Richard Crenna return as Troutman, and I mean, I can't imagine a sequel to this, to First Blood, where you don't bring Troutman back.
Yeah.
But we also have some exciting new faces. We have Charles Napier, who plays Murdoch, our good villain, if you will.
Yep.
Stephen Berkoff, who a lot of people probably remember from Beverly Hills Cop,
yep.
plays Podowski. We already talked about Julia Nixon and the great Martin Cove as Erickson, who is just like a great sort of chicken shit character, right?
I tell you what, I'm going to digress here for a second because I have a great Martin Cove story.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing a Rocky gig and I was at one of the Comic-Cons in Philly, and Cove was there signing. And it's kind of weird because he doesn't have anybody around him. He's got to set up his own table. He's got to charge for his own pictures. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like a little cheesy. Martin Cove is probably one of the nicest men I've ever met in the Hollywood business. When I was all done, I went over to him and he saw me dressed as Rocky and we had this great thing. And so we're talking for about 15, 20 minutes and obviously Karate Kid. And then I started segueing into Rambo and Erickson and all that, and how he said he and Stallone had really hung together in their early days. They had been such good friends that it really was a good teaming. He felt it was one of his prouder moments in movie history. So at the end of this talk that we had, right next to him was Johnny Lawrence. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What's his name? Billy.
Oh, goodness.
Whatever his name. We all know who he is. So,
yeah.
So Cobra Kai. So we're talking back and forth, and he takes my camera, and we took a picture together, me and Martin Cove, and it was him, the bad guy from Karate Kid, the blonde-headed kid. What was his name in the movie?
Johnny.
Yeah, that's right. And he took the picture that I have hanging on my wall of me and Martin Cove. And it was such a great moment. But about Rambo 2, he said how awesome it was. Just the dedication and the timing that Stallone had. How he just was relentless with his work ethic. And when others were sad, Stallone would push them not so much by verbally pushing them, just by leading by example. So that's my little side story.
No, and that's excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I know that they had a little bit of history together because they were together in Death Race 2000, and I'm not sure how much actual on-set interaction they had, but, that's always a connection you trace back.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And that's also a good little indicator, too, about how you said, Stallone leads by example on set. And I think if you don't have that kind of drive or personality on a movie – you're just not going to get results. I mean, there needs to be somebody there that, whether it's the director, somebody needs to be the sunshine in the storm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Agreed.
So is there anything else about First Blood 2 you want to talk about before we finish things up?
I often wonder to myself if Rambo had ended at Rambo 2 walking off, would Rambo be the pop culture icon it is? Rambo 3 is largely felt to be the weakest of the Rambos, although I could argue that against Last Blood. But
well, whatever. Up through part 4 at least.
Yeah, exactly. Rambo 4 was brilliant. I absolutely think that's one of the best action movies I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
I go First Blood, Rambo 2, Rambo 3 and then Rambo 5. But I just wonder, what if we never heard from John Rambo again? What if that was it? Would it look back on the, as this mythical creature, Rambo? He's still out there living amongst us, walking the streets, but we don't know because it's kind of like, I don't know, it's this ethereal thing. I don't know. I always think of stuff like that.
No, yeah, and I think so, Mike. I think that he would have remained an icon in sort of popular consciousness just because of how impactful First Blood Part 2 was, and I think it would be a movie that is remembered.
How about you? Do you have a particular moment about Rambo 2 that sticks out more than others?
For me, it's when he's on the radio with Murdoch. And I mean, if there's a scene in a movie where a guy pisses his pants, it's got to be that. I mean,
exactly.
The way that scene is shot, where you've got the lightning and the thunder, and then just the way Murdoch sells it, it's just a great scene. And then also the big helicopter face-off, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That is the height of absurdity in that movie, probably. But it's just such it's such a well-shot scene. You know, it's like a car chase, but with helicopters.
Let me ask you this. What's the difference? Why, when Arnold or Van Damme does a quote-unquote Rambo-like movie, why does it, like, not live up to the Rambo 2 type of POW rescue? What's the difference? Is it the filter on the camera? Is it the actor in question? Is it the script, the music, all of it, some of it? What do you think?
I think it's probably all of the ingredients, but at the end of the day, it's the character and the actor performing the character. And that's not to take anything away from Van Damme or Schwarzenegger, who have both turned in great performances. But in those movies, it's like you can just take stock action hero character and drop it into a script. Whereas First Blood Part 2, it needs John Rambo, and John Rambo is a big ingredient in that secret sauce.
If Rambo doesn't blow up the town in First Blood, if we don't feel his pain, if we see, because he's not a super soldier in First Blood. He's a Green Beret who goes through hell and is very determined. If First Blood doesn't happen, like, could Stallone come out with Rambo 2 without a First Blood, or does he have to have First Blood first?
That's an interesting question, Mike. I think you could actually make First Blood Part 2 as, like, the first entry in the series.
Right.
Especially coming off of like Rocky 3, where I think people were ready for these kinds of movies from Sly.
It was the 80s.
Yeah. But I think in terms of the character weight that you were talking about, you know, by no means do you really need to see First Blood to appreciate and understand First Blood Part 2. I think the opening scene of that movie establishes, you know, Rambo did something he wasn't supposed to do. He got locked up, and now this is his chance to get out.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny. I mean, I can sit down, and I have sat down and watched First Blood Part 2 without watching, you know, the other movies, whereas, you know, like Rambo Part 3, I would never watch unless I was marathoning those movies.
You're somewhat better than I am, because the only way I would watch Rambo 3 now is if Kim Jong-un had captured me in North Korea and I was giving away state secrets. That would be the only way they would torture me, by putting fish hooks in my eyelids and watching Rambo 3 or Last Blood. But hey, listen, let's not get bogged down in the negativity, Craig, okay?
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I would actually say, Mike, you know, that if somebody really wants to have a good sort of Rambo experience, watch First Blood and watch Rambo from 2008, and you've got a great story.
Agreed.
And then, you know, you can do Rambo First Blood Part 2 as sort of an isolated movie and have just a great sort of popcorn, you know, action-adventure night at the movies.
Yeah, I would agree. One of my all-time favorites, and it's definitely a top 5 Desert Island movie, provided there's electricity and a DVD player. And a TV. Yeah.
All right, Mike. So this was a lot of fun, and I know we've talked about it to death, but I'll never stop talking about it with you. It's The Pretender, which is, you know, your documentary.
Thank you.
that's, you know, it's available everywhere. We've talked about it. We'll talk about it again. It's available on Prime Video if you have Prime. I think you said Vimeo, Tubi. All kinds of places. And I'll include as many links as I can here in the show notes. But
you're a beautiful human being, my friend.
Appreciate it. I really value the fact that you're a part of the show. Aside from The Pretender, is there anything else? I know we're kind of still in a weird time as a country right now, but is there anything else you have going on?
You know, I've got – you remember the scene in Die Hard 2 when John McClane has to light the flames on the runway for the planes to land?
Yes.
And they're all circling, right? They're all just circling.
Yes.
So I'm just waiting to get to Philly and do my tours. Because of The Pretender and because of Sly's generosity in promoting it, and we've been doing a lot of podcasting and interviews and so on, we've gotten to a point now there are – I have gotten hundreds of people who – are sending me emails and messages. They cannot wait to come take my tours. And I'm trying to just stay relevant, and I'm trying to just bide my time and get to Philly so I can just keep doing my tours, because I love hanging with the Rocky fans.
Absolutely. And I know that will happen for them sooner than later.
Yeah.
And I do have a link to your tour on the website, but I'll also include it in the show notes. Mike, I could sit here and talk with you all day. I know we'll never run out of things to talk about.
This is true.
But for now, we're gonna call it at that, and just say happy birthday, Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Happy birthday. Thanks, Greg.
Okay, and before we get to our discussion with Ryan, I just wanted to read an email that we got from Chad, and it reads, "My name is Chad Trower. I live in Collinsville, Oklahoma. This year is the 35th anniversary of Rambo First Blood Part 2. This was my first Rambo movie to see in theaters. From the lines, "Do we get to win this time?" followed by "This time it's up to you," I was all in. Co-written by James Cameron and Stallone, plus directed by George Cosmatos. I loved the political statement and tone of this movie. The idea that we had soldiers over there who were still political prisoners was shocking to me. And the chance for us to go back and rescue POWs was an interesting premise, and I found it personally satisfying. Leave no one behind. Awesome action movie, Stallone movie, and Rambo sequel. Thanks to Slycast, Craig, and company for letting me share my thoughts on this film. Take care, and I will be listening. And Chad, thank you for listening, and thank you for sending in that email. All right, and the celebration of First Blood Part 2 at 35 continues. My birds are very, very excited. And it is always an honor and a privilege to welcome to the show Ryan from the Going the Distance podcast, as well as the Worst of the Best podcast, as well as my co-host on the Stallone podcast network show that we do once a month. Ryan, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Thank you so much, Craig, for having me. And yeah, we if you're listening, well, the chances are you're listening to this very episode on the new superpower show. I don't know if we have a name yet as of this recording. We haven't quite landed on the name of the channel yet, have we?
No, but who's ever listening to this on that feed will know the name. So
yeah,
they actually know something we don't.
talk about mind trip. Yeah, so... Or if you're a new listener to this episode because of David Morrell and you've come to listen to this episode and you haven't heard any of our other shows, basically you had three superpowers. Craig, the godfather of the Slycast podcast, Doug, the host of the Rocky Minute podcast, and myself, Ryan, the host of the Rocky Series podcast, Going the Distance. We all became friends online, you know, just like we did, and naturally over time we started kind of cross-pollinating on each other's shows, and it got to the point where I was like, is this my episode, is this your episode, or whose show is this? And so we thought, why don't we combine our three shows into one feed? And I think how it's going to work, and you can edit this out if you want, how it's going to work is basically Monday to Friday you're going to get the Rocky Minute podcast, Saturdays you'll get Going the Distance, the Rocky Series podcast, soon to be the Ramble series. We'll get to that. And then on Sundays, you'll get a Slycast episode. And we'll hopefully have other people join us over time to sprinkle amongst those days. How's that sound? Does that sound about what you were thinking there, Craig?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, every show will be clearly labeled as that show. And, you know, nothing's being replaced or taken away. It's just you're going to have some extra choices to listen to, especially with these long gaps between Slycast. You're going to get some great Stallone-based content, and then hopefully, like we said, eventually, you know, some outliers or friends of Stallone. So it's pretty exciting, and it seems like a natural sort of progression. I mean, we cross promote each other's shows all the time anyway. So why not just join forces and, you know, serve everything up on one nice clean feed for the listeners.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm excited to talk about Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Yeah. So this is the 35th, and it's funny. This is a big year for Stallone and, you know, anniversary years, if you will. So 1985 saw the release of First Blood Part 2, which we're sort of celebrating today. But in November, we'll be releasing two celebration episodes for Rocky IV and Rocky V, respectively. Rocky IV will be celebrating 35 years as well, and Rocky V will be celebrating 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So like you said, going the distance, you're currently covering Rocky Balboa. Mm-hmm. You said, Rambo's on the horizon. So I know on Twitter you put a poll out. Are you going to power through the Creed movies, or are you going right to John J. Rambo?
Yeah, I'm going to treat the – I was going to say a bad joke. I'll tell you offline. Oh, man. I'm going to – yeah, we are going to definitely treat Creed 1 and 2 more or less the same way that we have covered the Rocky franchise. And I'm still on the fence of how we're going to do that, because with the Rocky franchise, every season – we've done six seasons. We actually just finished – a little bit behind the curtain here. We just finished wrapping Rocky Balboa, the movie. So we're going to go into Creed very shortly. What we've done is we break down the film scene by scene and really get into the nitty gritty, but I'm not sure how much I'm going to cover Bianca singing. So we're going to definitely anything Rocky oriented and Drago oriented, it definitely will be very heavy discussions, but I admit Adonis moping in the gym, or I don't know. We'll find out. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, so that being said, yes, once we've wrapped up the Creeds, it's going to morph into the Rambo series podcast, but all the Rocky coverage will still be in that feed for people to go back and listen to. And it'll be labeled as such, but the episodes names will change too. You ready for the name of the episode, the podcast name for the franchise change? You want to hear it?
Let me see if I can guess.
Okay.
Do we get to win this time?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. No. It's a long road, the Rambo series franchise.
That's perfect, Ryan. You are great at coming up with names.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, yeah, I think this is officially the first time I've said it on the air, so I think it's kind of special I'm doing that here.
Oh, well, and I thank you for that.
Yeah. It's a long road, the Rambo series franchise. Okay.
Yeah. No, you're committed. And this isn't actually the first time we've talked Rambo. I think I know that we did that reaction episode together where Sly had released the photos from the set of Last Blood.
Right.
And I know you did a dedicated Last Blood review for the Going the Distance podcast. So this isn't our first time or your first time talking to Rambo, but specifically, I don't think I've ever heard you talk about First Blood Part 2 unless you covered it, you know, in a tertiary manner on the Last Blood review. But do you recall the first time you saw Rambo First Blood Part 2?
Yeah, so it's interesting. The Rambo series, and I'll talk about this on my show when we cover it, but I will say for now, it's the between Rocky and Rambo, the Rambo series was a series that I saw in actual chronological order of release. So I saw First Blood on VHS back in the day, and then when Part 2 came out, I was 10 years old. Still too young to be taken to the theater to watch it, but my parents, bless their hearts, when it came out on VHS, we rented it on a Friday night, and I'm telling you, I have never not loved this movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's just nothing not to love.
Yeah, it's funny. I talked to, earlier in the episode, I talked to Dave Morrell about it, and I believe... And it's funny because I should know this. I was there for all these conversations. But Mike Kunda was the one that sort of brought it to the surface was First Blood Part 2, the Rambo and Rambo First Blood Part 2 is the one that everybody thinks of. It's the one that gets parodied. It's the one that gets referenced. So I think it's, you know, it's probably the most popular Rambo movie out there.
Want to hear my take?
Yeah.
First Blood is the Rocky of the Rambos. First Blood Part 2 is the Rocky 4 of the Rambos. Rambo 3 is the Rocky 5 of the Rambos. Rocky 4 is the Rocky Balboa of the Rambos. And Last Blood is the Creed franchise.
I kind of like that analogy. I'm not too sure about the Creed connection, because I know the Creed films have been polarizing, but I don't think they've been nearly as polarizing as,
no,
as
Last haven't.
Blood was.
It's hard to actually pigeonhole Last Blood with another one of the films, but that's kind of how I see the Rambo films. Yeah.
No, that's a great analogy, and it's interesting because, you know, you can imagine that Sly was in a certain headspace when he made this and when he made Rocky IV, considering they were, you know, I don't know how close the productions overlap, but I do remember my conversation with Mr. Morell where he talked about, it was Kunda talking about there being a 2020 special where you saw Rambo or Stallone in character or in, you know, in the getup on the set of First Blood Part 2, writing notes for Rocky 4.
That makes sense, because he had shorter hair for 4.
Yeah, so I can imagine that, you know, the headspace that Sly had to be in there to sort of juggle his two big babies. You know, I can imagine that those occupying certain similar headspaces and, you know, kind of hitting similar notes. I mean, you could say that 1985 is the year that Stallone single-handedly defeated communism.
Yeah, absolutely. And started the Taliban.
We'll get to that.
That's Rambo 3. My apologies.
We'll get to that when we celebrate Rambo 3.
My apologies. Sorry, spoiler alert. My apologies.
So, what exactly is it about First Blood Part 2 that really resonated with you?
Oh, man. Really quickly, I know we've already eaten up a lot of time here. Right away, of course, Stallone's physique, his absolute brutality, everything from the opening scene that he's in prison. I remember just that opening scene in prison, and this is before I watched things on the internet, of course. It's 1985, so there's no spoilers. The fact that I saw my character, the character that I love from First Blood in prison, I was just like, oh my goodness, how is he going to get out of this? And then Troutman, and then their conversation at the fence, and the, do we get to win this time? And there's a part of me is like, yeah, because he lost in First Blood, just like Rocky did, you know? And so it was an amazing idea that we got to unleash the Rambo. And and then just everything with the girl, Poe, was her name Poe? I can't remember.
Kobay.
Kobay, you
know, yeah,
she's hot, by the way.
Yeah,
just everything, the betrayal from the U.S. government, the hiding out in the mud, the explosive bow and arrow. I mean, the explosive arrows. That just, as a kid, I was 10 years old when I saw this. My mind couldn't fathom exploding arrows. It was the superhero Rambo films, and I just I ate it up as a child. And of course, I can look at it as a 44 adult, and I can see whatever the silliness may or may not be. Yeah. I don't care because the 44-year-old Ryan is enjoying the film because 10-year-old Ryan did, and I don't want to take that away from my childhood experience. That this movie was just the right amount of awesome and pre-CGI. I just love how this movie is. It ages in some ways because it is 85.
Yeah.
But it doesn't age in a lot of ways because of all the practical effects.
Yeah, and it's funny. We talked about it earlier in the episode. But, you know, one thing about CGI and, like any other tool in a filmmaker's tool belt, it has its time and place. And I'm sure it saved a lot of time and maybe even some lives. Rambo First Blood Part 2 did lose a production member in an explosion. But the thing about practical effects to me is you watched it on screen and your eyes knew that what you were seeing was really happening. Somebody was getting thrown 25 feet in the air due to an explosion or, you know, a car was really rolling. And in CGI, your mind is processing what it's seeing, but it knows it's not real. And that somehow, right, that takes away a little bit.
It's really kind of interesting who handled this film. George P. Cosmatos.
Yes.
A really weirdly, oddly career that he had. He's passed away a while back. Yeah. But he's directed two of my favorite films, Tombstone and Rambo Part 2.
Yeah. And not to speak ill of the dead, but it's also possible that he didn't really do too much directing on either one of those movies.
I know. That's what's amazing. This guy has such his name is attached to two incredible films, but rumor has it, of course, probably Sly directed a lot of Part 2, Rambo, and Kurt Russell on Tombstone. So who knows? But yeah. To me, I find it kind of funny. Kevin Jarre was one of the story writers for First Blood Part 2.
Also wrote Tombstone, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He was actually the original director on Tombstone, too. He was fired. And that's when they bought in George P.
And lastly, you have, of course, a little bit of screenplay from James Cameron and Sly himself. The James Cameron stuff, I don't know what part he contributes to the I'd have to do some digging.
Well, no, you'll know as soon as you listen to this episode because Mr. Morell covers all of that. It's interesting because if you really think about it, like, sequels were still pretty young, too, when First Blood Part 2 came out.
Sure.
I mean, you had, you know, Godfather Part 2, which, you know, I mean, that's not a franchise sequel, really. But, I mean, aside from that, you had Empire Strikes Back. But, I mean, like,
There weren't as many. Yeah, compared to now, there wasn't many.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's expected that if a movie does well, it's going to get a sequel. But back then, you know, First Blood came out, it did what it did, and then, you know, I don't think anybody expected there to be a sequel. So it's interesting to watch the movie there, too, because it's really, and, you know, we talked about how this is sort of the parody of Rambo that everybody knows. But, it's the reason that we're sitting here talking about this movie. Or talking about this character. I mean, if First Blood had been a one and done, we would have covered it on Slycast, of course, but I don't think the character would resonate with people as much as it did, if not for First Blood Part 2.
Absolutely. I've got nothing but good things to say about Part 2. There's never a dull moment. You're never bored. The only bad part, and this is a spoiler alert for when we get to the end of that season. The weakest part of the whole film, unfortunately, was Sly's delivery of the Rambo speech at the end of Part 2. Yeah. For whatever reason, in First Blood, amazing.
Well,
you know, blood over me.
Yeah.
I don't see your legs. You know, it's amazing. And then, but then when he's talking to Troutman, I won. What they want.
Yeah.
I know. And it's just like, okay, oof. It's a little bit of an oof. I got to admit, it's pretty bad. Sly is a great macho man. He just exudes testosterone, and I love it. Masculinity, I love it. That's why you go to these films, especially in the 80s. Like, I'm not going to lie to you, as a 10-year-old kid, of course, I worshiped him. He's a god to me, right?
Yeah.
He took on an army, and he had the physique of a Greek god. And of course, as a kid, this is amazing. Because I was into wrestling back then, too, right? So all these men with the big muscles and everything, that's as kids, you're just, like, blown away by human beings like this. But I admit, I think even as a kid, I was kind of like, oof, that was a little bit weak. And then he walks off, and I'm like, where's he going? Like, does he have any supplies? Or is he coming back? Is he just going for a walk, or is he going to come back and get his stuff? I don't know where he's headed. Like, so anyways, we find out that he goes to some, Thailand,
yeah.
The stick fight with people. But anyways, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but that, to me, was the weakest part of the film. Other than that, it's I give it a 9.9 out of 10 for fun. It's a great film.
All right, so you said the scene you're least likely to be excited about when you're watching the film. What's the scene that really gets you pumped when you're watching this movie that you can't wait to come on?
Oh, if you don't say this is your scene, then you're lying. You're not a Rambo fan. It's the freaking part where he's – He's standing on the cliff, and that guy, the Viet Cong guy, is shooting at Rambo. For whatever reason, every shot to me, he's just a bad shot. The weapon's misfiring. I don't know, but he's not.
Do you think he was out of range?
No, that wasn't that. What, the bolt's out of range, but the arrow's not? Come on. I love it. It's almost like Rambo just kind of knew, like, oh, if I get shot, I get shot. I mean, it would be kind of embarrassing because I'm doing this in real slow motion, but. That to me is the best scene in the film. If you don't think that's the best scene in the film, I don't know what Rambo film you're watching.
Yeah.
And then right after, that cannon, that or sorry, that barrel of gasoline explosion drops on the cliff, and then of course Sly Rambo jumps off that cliff. That great stunt with the fire behind his feet. So you have that segment right there between him taking out that guy who shot his girl, right?
Yeah,
and then the explosion behind him from the helicopter above. That sequence alone is worth the price of popcorn.
Yeah. No, it's hard to argue with that, Ryan. In terms of the cast, I mean, we already talked about Stallone and, Richard Crenna's return. Is there anybody you want to talk about? You already talked about Julia Nixon, who played Kobay. But what about Murdoch or Padofsky or the great Martin Cove as Erickson?
Well, yeah, those are all great. But Charles Napier, who played Murdoch.
Yeah.
Murdoch was the Teasel character for this, and both did a great job. Different character arcs and different personalities, but boy, they both played off just that and how they despise the Rambo character in their own elements of first from a North a Korean veteran in the police force. Now you have a government official with some sort of military record as well, but kind of now working for that sleazy U.S. government and you know that and how Rambo hates both systems and you have to have a good actor to hate, and the fact that we hate Murdoch and we understand Rambo's anger towards him, it's great. And when of course when Rambo says, "No, I'm coming to get you, Murdoch, I'm coming to get you,"
with the lightning and the thunder,
I guess that's another scene. There's too many great scenes. That's another scene people would argue there's a great scene. I see. Maybe that one would be the one people talk about. I'm coming to get you. And the sound of him squeezing the microphone.
Yeah.
Oh, you got me too excited. I see. This is why I put the poll. Now you get why I put the poll on Twitter and Facebook. Like how much
you want to talk about these movies. Yeah,
I want to talk about Rambo. Want to talk about Rambo.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you sort of contrasted Murdoch and Teasel. I think they're both great. You know, the well written characters, but I think Teasel has a lot more of aspects that you can sympathize with than Murdoch, which I think makes Murdoch great. Is like Murdoch is a great straight up villain.
Yes. Yeah. There's nothing to like about him. He's a greasy car salesman.
And then he's got that great henchman in Martin Cove. So, in Erickson, who I think I referred to earlier in the episode as like the great chicken shit, just a great character. So yeah.
Also cool start with Sly and, Death Race 2000.
Yep. Although I pontificated a little bit on how much they actually interacted on the set of that movie.
Yeah, I don't think very much. No.
Yeah. But I mean, this is a great popcorn movie. I mean, like you said, it's hard to not watch this movie and enjoy it if you're able to, disconnect the parts of yourself that you need to disconnect. But this movie it did exactly what it was supposed to do. It's a movie that's made for a specific purpose, and that's the thing I love about the Rambo franchise is that there is really a movie for any mood. I mean, they're all in the action genre, of course, but if you want to stay grounded and a little bit more dramatic, you go to First Blood. But then you've got First Blood Part 2 or Rambo, Part 4 if you want to sort of the best of both worlds. But it's, and I guess you could say that about the Rocky franchise too, there's Rocky and Rocky 5, if you want more of the melodrama, if you will. And then, there's Rocky 3 and Rocky 4.
Yeah. You're right. Every film has its own flavor. And that's what I like about it. If it was one flavor, it'd be kind of boring. It's like when a musical artist releases an album, you still get the sense it's the same artist, but I like it when an artist has a different kind of sounding album. And depending on what kind of mood I'm in, depends what I'm going to watch or listen to.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I think that's also a sign of a good artist or creative force is, that insistence on not sort of repeating themselves.
And this is where I have to respectfully disagree with David Morrell, not because he's not wrong in his opinion, because that's his opinion. I enjoyed Last Blood, and the same way you disconnect, so to speak. I know the arguments that people have, and I agree with their arguments. I do. I understand everything everyone has said negatively about it. I'm not, and you know this, that when we're Stallone fans, I'm a Rocky fan, I'm a Rambo fan. I'm not monotone in my praise, and I. I recognize where there is flaws. We definitely are going to talk about the flaws that occur in every of these films.
Yeah.
And we've done so in the Rocky films. We definitely have we've called out Sly in a respectful way, where we've asked, you know, the question to Sly, who's not listening, but we asked, like, what were you thinking here? Yeah. Like, what's going on? Why are you doing this? What was the reason for this choice? But that's what makes it for an engaging discussion. So I know David, bless his heart, he hates Last Blood, and that's I understand, I get it, but just for me, because I'm not emotionally involved here, you know, as Rocky said, I'm not emotionally involved. Like, I enjoy the Rambo character. So the fact that I just got to see him on screen one last time, I embraced it. I admit, I just kind of geeked down and said, you know what, it's Stallone on film. Him at the theater, and I think that's the thing too, is I'm just watching my favorite icon on the screen, and I don't know how many times we're going to get to do this with a marquee movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I would agree with you there, and I look forward to being a guest on The Last Blood. I look forward to being a guest, hopefully, on every episode.
You will. Don't worry.
Not every episode, but I mean every movie discussion. But the thing with Last Blood for me is, if you, you know, you title it John Smith's Last Stand or something,
the movie works
so much better. And there are just too many moments where Rambo betrays himself as a character, but that'll be covered when we talk Last Blood on Slycast, and also when you talk about it on It's a Long Road.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I can't wait.
It will. So again, Going the Distance, Worst of the Best. Do you want to talk a little bit about Worst of the Best before we go?
Yeah, Craig's my biggest supporter about reminding me to plug that show. Yeah, so I have a sister podcast. I started both these podcasts. I started with my brother, but he's moved on from podcasting for now. He's got stuff going on with work and family where he can't dedicate to podcasting anymore. But I do The Worst of the Best with rotating guest hosts right now. And what it is we scour basically the internet, of course, looking for best of lists, whether it's music, movies, artists, food, TV shows, conspiracy theories, no matter what it is, people, bless their hearts, have made lists for us to read and look about. What we do is we talk about that list, whatever it means to us as an individual, and then me and my guest host will pick what we think is the worst thing from that list. Well, we've done stuff about YouTubers that do stuff, dangerous YouTubers, diseases, you name the topic, we've covered it. And it's interesting how it works. Like, for example, for the diseases one, we picked the 10 worst diseases that are killing people right now. It's kind of a COVID-related topic. And we decide you pick which one do you least likely want to get stuck with as a human being. So that's kind of how we do things. It's fun. I like it.
Yeah, and you know what? It might seem like an obvious thing, but do you plan on doing a Stallone episode?
Well, the only one we've done is we've done a Rocky episode.
Oh, you did? I must have missed that.
Very beginning. I think it was like episode 3. We did a Rocky episode. So go check that out. So if you're a Stallone fan, go to the Worst of the Best podcast. Check out our Rocky episode. I think it was like the 3rd episode where we picked the worst moments in the Rocky franchise, and there are some to choose from. So what we did was that, of course, each film was the best film. So I think we did the first 4 films because those were the biggest
box office wise.
Yes, yeah. Right. So that's the best. So there you go. So that was the best. Those are the top selling or top box office films. And then from each of those 4 films, we picked the worst moment we felt was in that film.
All right.
And the answers might surprise you. Yeah. And it was very hard to pick a worse one for part 1.
Yeah, well, I got to go back and listen to that. I'm not sure how I missed it, but the entirety of Adrian's coma, I'd imagine, has to be
on that list. It's a spoiler alert. I got to tell you, it's probably what I picked for part 2. I'd have to go back too. It's been a couple of years. Yeah.
Oh, cool. So I'll put a direct link to that episode, and then also to the Worst of the Best in the show notes.
Thanks, man.
Ryan, as always, it's always cool to sit down with you and talk these Stallone movies. And again, I'm not sure what we have on the slate for our next joint episode, but those are always fun. And, you know, when me, you, and Doug get together once a month or so and vote on or chat a movie that the listeners have voted on. And they always vote against us.
Yeah, well, yeah. we'll do one soon. But there's a lot of flux going on, a lot of changes going on our respective shows, but they're gonna restart sooner than later. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ryan, once again, thank you, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, man. Thank you.